I'm Art Napoleon. You're listening to CHLY Radio Malaspina in Nanaimo.
Your microwaves and computers are not worth a damn to me.
Look at all these islands, all granite walls and sandstone. See the mighty evergreens standing by.
Good morning. Welcome to Changes, the program on sustainability. I'm Suzanne Gregory, the coordinating producer of the show, and this morning we have once again...
Librarians on the radio. Go librarians, go librarians, go.
And, of course, that means that Justin Unra and Jason Cuffler are here in the studio. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Suzanne.
It was so nice to hear the jingle and to see the stress melt off of Jason's face here as we stepped into the studio on this wonderful Librarians on the Radio show day. Hooray.
Yay.
Okay. So, what are you going to talk about?
So today, well, it is April is National Poetry Month here in Canada. I believe that is the nation that we are talking about. And we have a show today. We're talking about some different early literacy projects. We're going to be talking about the use of poetry and things, especially in building some early literacy. That's kind of our first half of the show. Later on in the show, then, we have a book fight that is not a book fight. And Jason was very excited to be back in judging on this one, I believe.
I'm ready.
Ooh, yeah. I wonder how Patrick feels about that.
We will find out how Patrick feels. I think Patrick is actually on vacation right now.
I'm sure he's listening, though.
Of course he would. Oh. How could he not?
Of course. And if you've listened to Librarians on the Radio before, you know exactly the running joke that we have going here about Jason judging.
Jason is not our favorite judge, but he is the best one in this studio right now.
Well, and I also tried to get three different celebrity judges, if you will, and they all fell through.
But that's okay. But it's Poetry Month, so let's celebrate some poetry kind of a deal. Jason, do you have a favorite poet?
You know, not really anymore, but I guess in case she's listening, I better say that I like Naomi Watts and stuff because, you know, she kind of scares me sometimes. So I don't want to make Naomi mad. So yay, Naomi. And she, I believe she's still Nanaimo's Poet Laureate. I don't think there's a new one yet. So I like Naomi. I just recently started, now he's not Canadian, but I just recently started reading Charles Bukowski's poetry, which I'd never read before, and someone that I know recommended him to me. So I downloaded one of his books of poetry from our libraries to go online and was happily reading in bed on my iPad last night. So there's that. And there's some other Canadian poetry too on libraries to go. Another really great resource that everyone should check out is the University of Toronto Libraries Canadian Poetry Online Project. So you can go online to their website. You can look at 19th century Canadian poets and their poetry, and also contemporary Canadian poetry as well. So that's a cool way to celebrate Canadian Poetry Month. Just, you know,
yeah,
check
no,
that
that's
out.
That's really cool. And I assume that you, as agreed beforehand, you brought your stack of the high school poetry that you are now going to read on the air for us, right?
No. I think you're misinformed there, Justin. I would only read mine if you read yours. And let's just put it this way. Around the time that I wrote a lot of poetry in high school, I was listening to a lot of The Doors and read a lot of Jim Morrison's poetry. So it's super dark and teen angsty, and I would not enjoy reading that on air.
Well, that actually reminds me, and this is totally doing a podcast advisory thing for all of our listeners here. Have you listened to the CBC Radio podcast, Grown-Ups Read Things That They Wrote as Kids?
No.
It is this amazing open mic series that a CBC Radio person put together. And so people come to, you know, to bars and do things to read the things that they wrote as little kids. And it is awesome. There's, because kids, you know, you're open and unfiltered and stuff, and you really get into this, into that kind of, that, well, it's that poetry mindset, right? It's the different way of looking at things. There's all sorts, like, it is so funny to listen to. You should totally check it out once you are done listening to Librarians on the Radio Today. It is a podcast that's out there. So, like, there's, like, an 11-year-old who wrote a self-help book on fitness, finance, and feelings. If you feel it, you can get it. Then she also reads from her sequel, which is a book. So she was 13 at that point, which is a book of marriage advice and stuff. And it is hilarious. Some of them are like super dark. It's like there are these phantom killer kittens that come to town. There was one about a kid whose family was replaced by giant spiders, but no one would believe him. It was intense. And so, yeah.
I think I'm going to have nightmares now.
Exactly.
Killer kittens and my parents as spiders.
Exactly. Well, that's what poetry is all about, isn't it?
I guess. What about you, Justin? Who's your favorite poet?
Oh, my favorite poet, I go old school on this. I go Li Bai, Tang Dynasty. There's a poem that I used to be able to, I would have been able to recite, but I practiced this morning and I could not recite it just off the top of my head. But it begins with "Never refuse wine."
Hmm.
And Li Bai was one of the great drunken masters of Tang Dynasty poetry. A great kind of holy fool sort of thing. I love his work, and there's something that's definitely out there.
And what about your poetry? Did you bring it?
Oh, I did not. I did not. I'm sorry. I brought stuff to talk about other people's poems from the grown-ups read things that they wrote as kids.
But I can only imagine you've got some pretty good teen angsty stuff.
Oh, it's very good, but we don't need to talk about that. Let us move on. Let us move on, and actually, let's talk about one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is we've been getting to do some cool stuff. Speaking of talking with kids and getting kids telling their stories, one of the things, now I believe our listeners should remember Emily Orr, who was here in the studio last week. She's not here today, but we got a special report from Emily this time, talking about a cool program that we've been doing as like this outreach with a new classroom here in Nanaimo. And it actually uses, now when I say Tales the Whale, do the people in this studio, I hope the people in this studio know who I am talking about.
Of course.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, this whole report that Emily's got here is about how Tales the Whale, how some of the things that we've been learning about the library's new mascot. I believe, when did Tales start doing stuff with the library?
Summer, I think, at least. Maybe late spring.
Late spring, early summer. So,
this would be last year.
Yeah, last year. So Tails isn't like a venerable presence, but we've been, we've been lucky enough to have this mascot. And this report from Emily here is going to be talking about some of the things we've learned about Tails the Whale.
Hey, so what's black and white and red all over?
A newspaper?
Well, yes, but also Tails the Whale. Tails is the library's new orca friend. Tails was named last summer in an island-wide contest, and even though he's been shaking fins, playing hockey, and just hanging out with us for almost a year, we didn't know much about him until now.
Tails likes to eat a lot, too.
Oh, he's done some punches.
He got a big, giant truck.
What is his favorite food that you've noticed?
Chocolate pudding and ice cream. Chocolate ice cream. He likes sugar.
And does he drive it?
Yeah.
Is he a good driver?
Yep. And I think he's gonna go on a diet.
His tail's getting bigger.
No, he stays the same size.
Oh. Does he snore?
Yeah. Like, just a little. Not that much. He eats some of my dinner too, which one time we had turkey soup and he had some.
Tales of Tails the Whale is a classroom journaling project that's been happening at the Nasiga Kumtux Elementary Center.
I read a good book to Tails the Whales. He even read with me. The book was called Henny Penny Adventures. We read and read and read until Mom called us for dinner. We had turkey for dinner. Gabby, me, and Tails the Whales were playing with our food. We were happy.
My name's David.
And how old are you?
5.
I'm Jaden and I'm 7.
I'm 7 and my name is Storm.
My name is Lily and I'm 6.
Jeffrey and I'm 7.
My name is Owen and I'm 9 years old.
I'm Camilla and I'm 6.
Isabella and I'm 9.
My name's Chloe and I'm 6 years old.
Damon.
And how old are you?
5.
My name is Heather Goodall, and I'm the vice principal teacher at Nasiga Kumtuk's classroom.
Nasiga Kumtuk's Elementary is a new primary school that opened here in Nanaimo with a focus on Aboriginal curriculum. And we've been fortunate enough over that past year to visit them to share story times and some technology-based programming. And the Tales Tales Journal was teacher Heather Goodall's idea. And how it works is, let's let Heather tell us.
Well, it's really a way to connect the library with the mascot Tales to the Whale. But it's also an opportunity for children to connect with home, in that this book goes home and parents have a chance to help their children write a story about Tales when Tales gets to go home and spend a night at their house.
I went biking with Tales the Whales.
I stayed at Nick's house and he had a birthday cake.
I went to karate with Tails the Whales. He was hiding under my coat so no one would steal him.
So it's a really great opportunity for parents to see what we're doing at school and to participate in the writing process.
And there's not a lot of bathroom breaks when karate's going, because then it'll disturb the others.
Did Tails need to use the bathroom?
No, he usually pees on the bench. They pee in the ocean, so what?
So
animals.
Exactly.
Well, and a lot of the parents do the writing, especially at the beginning of the year and for the younger students. Mm-hmm. So yes, definitely, we see the scribing and the input that the parents have. But it's also interesting to see how the stories show how kids are interacting with their families at home, that they're reading together, that they're cooking dinner together, that they're going on hikes and playing at the park. So that's a really neat for the kids to be able to come and share that with the class.
I put a compass in his bag. Tails slept with my dog. He ate hard-boiled eggs. He had toast. It was good. The compass is the starting of a traveling kit. People can leave more stuff. I love Tails. Tails is happy.
One interesting thing to me is that when they bring Tails the Whale into their home, they're also inviting him to join the whole cast of fictional characters that they interact with in that sphere, be that other toys, interactive games, pets, TV and book characters. And as far as literacy building exercises go, this kind of connecting of writing to experiential real-world activities has been shown to be really effective.
Last night I was playing with my other puppet, and Tails the Whales. And I went to bed.
Me and Tails watched SpongeBob and ate nachos and cheese.
I forgot to bring Tails back before our winter holidays, so he stayed Christmas with my family. Tails was a big help to me for I got sick. He kept me company. Thank you. I love Tails.
Me and Tails the Whales played Hunger Games, and then he got really tired, so I put him in a bed, and then I got to watch Walking Dead.
Right now it's good. It's going home nightly with the kids. Mm-hmm. I would say the kids are really engaged in this activity. They're very excited when it's their turn to take Tails home. And we know, too, from research that it's really important that kids write about things that are meaningful. And so this is something that is meaningful, and it's happening right in their lives at that moment. So the writing that you can get from it is quite rich.
So where does Tails stay when he's with you?
He stays in I have no idea what it's called.
Okay, what does it look like?
Fish going in.
Oh, so a fish bowl or a fish tank?
A fish tank.
Who are your other puppets that Tails was playing with?
Dragon, Ladybug.
How do you play Hunger Games?
It's in a movie. So there's teams, and then you guys have to fight with toy weapons. He wanted to play it a different way. He wanted me to swing him with my scarf.
Butterfly and unicorn and...
Oh, he stays in the fish tank.
Yes.
With the other fish.
Mm-hmm. He snuggled with me in my bed when I got sick, and he helped me open my presents.
Does he get along with them?
Mm-mm. He eats the fish. My mom heard some thumping on my floor living room.
Oh.
And that was Santa. Tails saw him because he kept his eyes open when he was sleeping. The last one is Unipony.
What is a Unipony?
I mean Unikitty.
Okay, what is a Unikitty?
Unikitty is from a Lego movie.
Oh man, he eats nachos and then he eats the other fish.
Yes.
So do you have any fish left?
Nope.
That is a sad story.
I've done this at other schools. Yeah. This is my move to the island, but when on the mainland where I worked, it was a very common practice for teachers to do this kind of journaling back and forth. I've seen it with teddy bears, you know, other kinds of stuffed animals, but we chose Tails the Whale to connect to the library.
And there are other local examples of creative, dedicated facilitators starting intergenerational literacy projects. One of these is the Elder Project, a poetry workshopping series started in Chemainus in 2010, where high school students are paired with First Nations elders to document the elders' stories and then create poems out of them. It was begun by poet and teacher Wendy Morton. Here's Wendy talking about the 12 Elder Projects she's organized.
The first time I work with them, I'm training them to write a poem. Then generally on the second day, the elders arrive. And I have a list of questions that have been evolving over the past 5 years about the elders' lives. And then the students write the poems. And then on the third day, the students rewrite the poems, and then I take them.
So
because a connection was made that otherwise would not have been, and I've watched that. Often the elders have not had the opportunity to speak to the students, speak to young people about their lives, to even tell their stories, because nobody has asked. And I think to preserve this as a kind of history, a personal history, in these poems is significant. I mean, we're not dealing with, you know, simile and metaphor and everything, but compression, right? A short line, a way of seeing the world. I mean, I'm not trying to train them to be experts. I'm trying to say, listen, write, make it short, see what you can say in a poem. This is Anne-Marie Louis. This is the poem that she wrote for Laura Antoine, who was her elder. I went to West Home Indian Day School for grades 1 to 6. Racism was bad. The janitor called us dirty little Indians. He was a military person, shined the floors, didn't like us to use the bathrooms. They gave us rotten apples to eat, There were worms in them. They gave us dog biscuits to eat, powdered milk that tasted like paint. Sometimes I threw up. I was supposed to speak English. If I spoke my language, I would get hit on the head with a metal ruler. I would go home with blood dripping down my head. Now, I can speak a bit of my language. When I do, I have memories of the ruler hitting my head. So, I mean, how else would Laura have told that story, and how else would Anne Marie have heard it? Yeah, that's what I mean about changing. So anybody who has difficulty with language, poetry is a way into it, or literacy.
Do you have any next steps with the project? Is there anything different you want to do, or?
Well, that's a good question, and that's something that I'll need to think about. Yeah. I think we'll continue Tales the Whale for this year.
Yeah.
And then perhaps next year we'll have a different mascot. We'll see. You know, coming to the library, maybe at the end of the year we can have a celebration at the library, bringing Tails home.
I just kept him in the bag, so he slept beside my uncle's dog.
Did the dog chew on Tails at all?
No.
And what was the biggest mess that Tails came back with?
He needed a bath a couple months ago. He needed a bath because there's yogurt all here.
Oh, he came back with chocolate pudding all over the white part of Tails the Whale.
So, Storm, I heard that you had quite the adventure with Tails. Can you read us your story of what happened?
Yes.
Thank you.
Tails the Whale came on a very windy, blustery day. Tails the Whale was very dirty. So me and Mom decided to give Tails the Whale a wash. Now he smells better and he looks very clean. I enjoyed our visit once again.
So luckily the next family were able to have time to give him a bath.
It sounds like they've mainly been pretty responsible about it.
Yeah, no, it's been great.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I have a lot of questions about this. How did Tails get so dirty?
Well, he was at someone else's house, so they spilt something on him, so we had to clean him, but we tried soaking him in the sink, so it didn't work because it dripped all over the floor, so we put him in the washer, and then it worked with Bounce.
As you can tell, Tails is a very resilient and open-minded creature, eager to participate in all sorts of activities. And when you see the party animal out and about on the island this summer, be sure to ask him about the Lego movie. But maybe keep an eye on your pet goldfish.
The end.
The music for this report was Tuffet and Mighty Lil Bumblebee by Origami Repetica and Canyon Breeze by Montana Skies. They were both shared under Creative Commons licenses.
All right, so thank you very much. That was Emily Orr doing that, our special report there.
That was pretty awesome. I hadn't heard any of that, so that was a nice surprise for me. Very cool. Good job to all of you.
Well, thank you. And one of the cool things that actually, like, we can follow up with that is that this summer I got a secret document from our children's committee, and they are actually planning Adventures of Tails the Whale backpacks that people will be able to borrow from the libraries this summer, so that everyone will be able to, yeah, borrow a Tails, bring them home, and, yeah, tell some stories, some of their own stories with them, and, yeah, with the backpacks and things, and, yeah, so it's going to be really, really cool.
I want to do that. I want to read him some of my old poetry.
Well, there we go. Yes. I'm sure he will be a very forgiving critic.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, no, I think that was kind of what we wanted to talk about for the Tails the Whale thing. Suzanne, do you have some stuff that you wanted to talk about here?
I have a few events, but first of all, of course, we'll remind everybody that CHLY's Spring Fund Drive is still on. First of all, we'd like to thank Wesley Morose, Joan Ryan, Bobby Schramm, Michael Henry, Tina Coldwell, Carly Marie Nagum, Tina Livingston, Craig Palin, Doris Lavoie, Akil Pessoa, and many others for donating already. And if you pay a pledge in any amount, by Monday, April 13th, and say that you listen to Changes, you will be entered into a draw for a pair of gold passes to, what else? The Cascadia Poetry Festival.
Of course.
Which is coming up from April 30th to May 3rd in Nanaimo. That's downtown and at VIU. It's a big deal, actually, because it covers the whole Cascadia region, which extends down into Washington State and Oregon, I think, and includes, obviously, BC. So there'll be poets coming from all over the place, not to mention poetry aficionados. So you can win $50 worth of tickets just by phoning in a pledge to CHLY and then paying it by April 13th and saying that you listen to Changes. We'll draw for those prizes on our April 14th show, which is a Poetry Matters show. That's next week. And we will let you know right on the show who the winners are. The number to call is, as always, 250-716-3410, or go to chly.ca and click on the word donate. And for information on the Cascadia Poetry Festival, you can go to cascadiapoetryfestival.org. And of course, I haven't mentioned all of the other great prizes that the station is offering during this fun drive. So do have a look at our website. They've got quite a bit of information there. You can actually, at chly.ca, just click on that big word donate. And that takes you to a page that has loads of information on how you can get involved. Now, there might still be a couple of tickets left for an event on Thursday called Eating Local with Food Share. And that is at Lucky's Liquor in Country Club Mall, Thursday, April 9th, 7 o'clock. Tickets are $50, but this is a special deal because Food Share's chef, Francois DeJong, is going to open a surprise box of local food and prepare a three-course meal on the spot.
Oh, Iron Chef? That's awesome.
And the staff of Lucky's will be there, of course, to help you choose local wine or beer to have with your meal. So this is very, very interesting. You can contact Lucky's by calling 250-585-2275. They also have a good website, www.luckysliquor.ca, or you can phone Food Share at 250-753-9393. And finally, the Nango Grannies are a local group that supports grandmothers in various parts of Africa who are raising their orphaned grandchildren because the generation in between have died of AIDS. These grannies face enormous challenges, not just financial, but also in terms of discrimination based on their sex and age. So next week, the Nango Grannies, who are the local Nanaimo group supporting the African grannies, we'll be sponsoring Barbara Coloroso, who's one of the world's most trusted parenting educators, who will speak about the new, updated, and expanded version of her book, The Bully, the Bullied, and the Not-So-Innocent Bystander, from preschool to high school and beyond, breaking the cycle of violence and creating safe and more deeply caring communities. Now, that's at the Port Theater, Tuesday, April 14th at 7 p.m. Tickets are on sale, of course, at the Port Theater box office, online at porttheater.com, by phone 250-754-8550, or in person from 11 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Monday to Friday, and Saturdays, noon to 5. Barbara Coloroso will sign copies of her book after the talk. Proceeds from sales of the book will go to Literacy Central Vancouver Island. And there's a really cute 56-second anti-bullying video at www.nangogrannies.org. And I trust, of course, that the library has Barbara Coloroso's newest book on order. Her previous book is definitely in the system, I know, and it was wonderful. I read that one several years ago.
I am sure that it is. Barbara Coloroso is one of those authors we tend to get kind of automatically. So yes, I'm sure we have it on order already.
Yes. That will be the program that you are listening to on CHLY 101.7 FM is Changes today with Jason Cuffler and Justin Unruh. And I think now we're going on to...
So because we know that on Changes, you know, because Poetry Matters has its own show, we thought, even though it's Poetry Month, it's like, well, you know, David Fraser does such a good job with so many kinds of poetry. Let's do a poetry thing that would be a little bit something that would be a bit different from what David Fraser might be doing on a Poetry Matters thing. So... for today's book fight, we are not doing a book fight. We are doing a hip-hop album fight because hip-hop is the poetry of today. Not that other poetry. Oh, dang it. I'm putting feet in my mouth. I should just stop right now. You know what? I will apologize for putting my foot in my mouth. And let's just roll some tape here for this album fight.
I might want to mention how I kind of wrestled with this one.
Yeah.
Cool. Although that is kind of sabotaging myself. Sabotage. Welcome, listeners, to the next installment of our book fight, although this isn't really a book fight. My name is Patrick Siebold.
And I am Justin Unruh. So it's Poetry Month.
Is it?
It is.
Oh, right. I forgot.
And what better poetry is there in this world than Kanye?
Oh, yeah. I had to start off with the K word, okay?
Hello, white America, assassinate my character. Money matrimony, yeah, they tryna break the marriage up. Who gon' act phony, who gon' try to embarrass you? I'ma need a day off, I think I call...
Justin put it to me to choose a hip-hop rap artist to do for Poetry Month here, and I really wrestled with this. My first thought was Watch the Throne, Jay-Z, Kanye, 2012. Even though I'm not a big hip-hop fan, I listened to this on a road trip years ago, and it was really catchy. I tried not to like it, but I did, and I thought it'd be nice to do something kind of populist. Upon listening further, closer inspection, it's not for everybody. It might offend some people, but that's part to do with, I think, rap culture. You know, there's just a certain amount of sexism and, you know, misogyny involved, and I feel, you know, I'm having a bit of a moral dilemma, but this is still an awesome album.
But what it is not as awesome as is the album that I am defending. So my hip-hop album goes back into the vault, the early 90s vault, the Beastie Boys' Ill Communication. Ill Communication is one of those, like, formative albums of my teenage years. This is totally my road trip album. You get in the car, and the record scratch for Sure Shot comes on. You won't stop.
'Cause you can't, you won't, and you don't stop. 'Cause you can't, you won't, and you don't stop. Or when you can't, you won't, and you don't stop.
Nicely done. Nice quote. Way to pull it straight out of the bag. It's, you know, the only question I have for you, Justin, is why not Paul's Boutique?
Oh, okay. So that is a really good question. Paul's Boutique is probably musically the better one, but because it's Poetry Month, I wanted things that were more on the lyric side and stuff. Ill Communication is the one that has Q-Tip on Get It Together. Like, that is the poetry that I have used to woo ladies.
So you're defending a Beastie Boys album here on the grounds that it has an outside artist, so that's your poetry?
Is that what I did?
Q-Tip. And come on, half the songs are instrumental. The Beastie Boys, through their effects, they're hard to understand sometimes. I mean, I love the Beastie Boys too. But they purposely, you know, muddy the waters by making it hard to listen to from the get-go by adding effects. You know, I mean, not that I shouldn't have said that. Now you're going to start talking about vocoding or vocoders.
And we totally are going to talk about this. So let's talk about production values.
Oh,
then.
My goodness. Okay, well, there I have got you beat.
This is something like the Holocaust. Millions of our people lost.
This has a murderous production value. Watch the Throne.
Now who gon' stop me? Who gon' stop me? Who gon' stop me? Who gon' stop me?
Black cars, black cars, black on black, black bras. Whole lot of money in a black bag. Black strap, you know what that's for.
These are two superstar rappers at the very peaks of their career, also very good friends, who come together and create this thing. Just the ease, swapping lyrics back and forth. You could probably talk about that too. I mean, and sure, some songs aren't, I talked about some of my issues with some of the songs. I feel like they're like set pieces, like in a theater. You know, they're just there. They're part of hip hop, like the fronting, you know, talking about cars. But this is one of those albums where Kanye and Jay-Z, they don't talk about that as much as they do in their other. There's actually substance here. There's stuff going on.
You had the production values. You had the richest, illest mofos alive recording this album.
Learjets flying producers around the world.
Exactly. Ill Communication is not that album. Well, it's early 90s. It's a much grittier kind of sound. It's the samples that are being used here are kind of rougher. They're a bit more old school hip hop. That's not even a little bit more compared to Watch the Throne. Ill Communication is hella old school. It's using funk, it's using Tibetan chanting. That's where kind of the production values stuff are. But for so much of this album, it's these three artists trading lines and going back and forth and back and forth. So much of Ill Communication is about the flow between the artists here, the flow between the words. It's wordplay, and this was the album that taught me about how poetry and wordplay work.
I wouldn't say it's really socially relevant, you know? I mean, musically, yes. The thing with Kanye, I know everybody hates Kanye. You know, I hate Kanye. The ridiculosity factor is like, it's just so high.
But the hating Kanye is actually part of, that's totally part of the album too.
You know, I mean, his whole role in pop culture I find interesting. And, you know, rap in general, it's just, it's like a phenomenon. I'm just saying, Prince Williams ain't do it right if you ask me. Cause I was him, I would have married Kate and Ashley. And his music and his whole, you know, place in pop culture is just to be provocative. I say I'm the illest cause I'm suffering from realness. Got my
niggas in Paris and they going gorillas, huh? I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It
gets the people going.
Because I don't think he understands what he's really doing a lot of the time. But, you know, lyrically and in terms of rap, I think he is a creative force. You know, they call him prog rap, you know, and he is fairly progressive despite the vocoder thing, which gets kind of irritating. And I already ruined you because you ain't even alive. Paparazzi pursuing you. Sins of a father make. And then, but then, you know, you listen to it, and there are actual songs with some content in there. Like, there's the New Day song, which is framed as a letter to the pair's imagined sons. It's like a literary device, almost. It gives them an opportunity to talk about their future sons and their own mistakes. First drink together. This was mobile talk. Look the man dead in his eyes, so he know he talk truth when you speak it. Keep your word, keep it. Especially with Kanye's super inflated ego, you know, to see him kind of just talk about something personal is kind of. I want him to have an easy life, not like easy life. Just want him to be
someone people like. Don't want him to be hated all the time. Cool. But on the Beastie Boys side, so I can step to that.
You are so from Winnipeg.
Ill Communication, this is right in the middle of when they were very big on the Tibet stuff. And so we do get all of this Tibetan chanting. There's
hippies. He's actually my favorite.
Well, NCA is totally, like, this album is the thing that introduced me as a young man to Tibetan Buddhism, to the whole idea of a bodhisattva vow. MCA also, in their, like, right very first song, you know, know, that's formative stuff back in the 90s there.
Well, you've got Buddhism, I've got Beyonce, bro.
I do bow to Queen B on this, so yeah. Some so gangster, be so pretty in pictures, red jeans and a blazer and some Louis Vuitton slippers. In the That's My Bitch song.
Yeah, that's not one of my favorites, but yeah.
But it has this amazing line in there. Don't make me bring Thelma in it. Bring Helly, bring Penelope, and Selma in it. Back to my Beyonce's. So this, okay, so this is kind of the point in the album fight where I'm switching sides. But it's got this amazing bit in there, and this kind of actually speaks to what you were talking about the Watch the Throne being about something.
Yes.
When Jay-Z is talking about Beyonce, you know, they are two of the most powerful people in American culture.
They're just unbelievable. They're like a corporation, you know. They're so smart. And, you know, there's a little bit of American dream in Jay-Z. You know, this is a kid. I don't know if you know anything about him, but he, you know, he basically grew up in the projects. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a smart kid. He didn't do drugs, but he had to sell drugs to get ahead. You know, he like basically lifted himself out of that by his bootstraps, you know, himself, you know, and there's something like romantic about that. It's interesting for me, you know, a very white librarian from Regina, Saskatchewan. It's like a glimpse into this other world. And there's content like Murdered Excellence. Like, it's about black-on-black crime in the States. It's a social commentary. And I could die any day type attitude. Plus his little brother got shot repping his avenue. It's time for us to stop and redefine black power. 41 souls murdered in 50 hours. That's actually something, the sense of place and where your roots are, that is something that even in your overproduced, excuse me?
Okay, hyper-produced, let's say hyper-produced Watch the Throne there. Even in there, they are talking about, you know, their roots with the Beastie Boys, with Ill Communication, that sense of where I came from is totally a big part of it.
It's part of just the rap culture, you know. I was talking about those like set pieces. Well, there's certain things you always do, you know. You're a representative of your rap or hip hop community, you know. And it's like there's these things you mention in every song, and some of them are a little unpleasant, and some of them, you know, I don't take seriously, but maybe I should. It's strange to hear Kanye and Jay-Z like occasionally sound almost humble. Well, he mentions in the first song, Church in the Wild.
Okay. Yeah.
Kanye mentions how, well, he just basically, well, he doesn't, okay, maybe he's not really humble, but he points out his ego, you know, but he's done this in the past. I know he's apologized for being so egotistical, and then he goes and, you know, cuts down poor Taylor Swift.
Sorry to interrupt, and I swear I'm going to let you finish, but I couldn't just sit back and listen to you guys. But I want to say that I think the greatest hip hop record of all time is Lana Del Rey's Ultraviolence. And let me tell you why. Number one, she grew up apparently on hip hop. She dated Axl Rose. That's pretty gangster. Eminem rhymed that he wants to punch her in the face. That's some street cred, right? Right there. She sang at Kanye's wedding. Nash Pop took Make Some Noise by the Beastie Boys and made it better by mixing in Lana Del Rey. And come on, just look at the track listing for Ultraviolence. Let me read it to you. Cruel World, Ultraviolence, and Hey.
Oh, the thing that I read. So, and that actually kind of speaks to the production values thing about how white musicians get away with lo-fi kind of things.
True,
that,
yeah.
Like, Beck has made a career on this, you know, bedroom closet kind of making music.
Yeah.
There are so many white artists who do that, whereas the black artists that, you know, become the illest mofos alive, you know, they have to be like Michael Jackson level awesome all the time. And that doesn't lead you to be a really well-adjusted person the way that the Beastie Boys got to be. Blood stains the Colosseum doors. Lies on the lips of a priest.
Thanksgiving disguises.
And that's totally erased.
Yeah, that's just like the hypocrisy of our times, right? Like, it's, as I sound pretentious when I say that, but, you know, and here's me speaking for the old, like, white guy in Nanaimo, of, you know, I live in a privileged place, in a privileged society, as a member of that society. It's weird, it gets racialized even talking about it, even broaching the subject.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Jesus was a cop in a Yeezy, play beats, overflow the Holy Ghost, get the hell up out your seats. This album is just awesome. You know, it's got R&B singer Frank Ocean, so many samples, expansive samples. You know, it's got Beyonce, it's got Bon Iver's Justin Vernon. That little sample of his gets thrown around a little bit. And that's a weird thing for them to even think to add to this. You know?
That is. I had no idea that was in there.
The weird thing is, for Jay-Z and Kanye, this could be considered, in the context of their careers, actually a relatively minor album.
Mm.
You know, because they're both coming off these, you know, massive albums before this. So. She said, yeah, can we get married at the mile? You know, and I know people are going to get judgy on me for defending this album. And, you know, that's fine. Bring it. And show me why you deserve
to have it all. As far as the albums as works of art, I would say that Ill Communication, it's a fundamental one. You're talking about Watch the Throne covering different genres and stuff. I haven't mentioned the punkness.
They started themselves, the Beastie Boys were originally a punk band, right?
What would you say is the best track on Ill Communication?
I mean, I hate to choose the chart topper, but, you know, I mean, Sabotage is the one that really jumps out at you, I mean, musically. I don't know about lyrically, because I can't understand anything we're talking about, but
seriously, the best track on Watch the Throne is Niggas and Terrorists.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm Libo, go Michael, take your pick, Jackson, Tyson, Jordan, Game 6. It is.
And it gets the people moving.
I know. And, you know, okay, I know Kanye is like the Will Ferrell quote, he's provocative, but, you know, okay, and he pisses people off. But these days, you have to provoke people. People are so apathetic, stuck in their... And it's so this. It is. It may not be thought-provoking, but it's. It may be anger-provoking. It'll get people off their butts.
Yeah, well, and Ill Communication is totally a thought-provoking and, yeah, poetic work, more about, like, poetry for its own sake. Just let me embark on the lyric on the noun and the verb. Which I would argue is actually the real sake of poetry. So the wordplayness to it, that flow kind of thing, that's why I think Ill Communication is a better poetry.
Are you using the art for art's sake, the...
Yes,
the art, the life reflects art, or art reflects life.
I'm saying that art doesn't need to reflect life.
Well, then where's the relevance? See, I don't think that holds any water.
All right. Okay. If you were to recommend another hip hop album, what would you recommend?
Oh, that's a good one. I grew up in, you know, the '90s skateboarding, and I was into Public Enemy and. You know, and I admit that I liked my gangster rap. I used to really like Gangstar and Mobb Deep and those kind of 90s rap. Like, I like the 90s rap. Definitely that stuff is not for everybody. It's like an angry young man's kind of music. What other rap or hip hop do you like, Justin?
See, I would actually go, so for my old school stuff, I'm Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
Wu-Tang for life. Yeah. Enter the 36 Chambers is just an amazing piece of work. It was one of those things. I thought about defending that for this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, then I run into the Old Dirty Bastard situation.
I was just going to reference Old Dirty. He, you know, my partner Jess, Old Dirty is her favorite. I've listened to so much Old Dirty, more than I can. There's only so much Old Dirty you can listen to, seriously.
But for like more modern stuff, actually my favorite, I would say kind of the heirs to the Beastie Boys-ishness would be Das Racist. Because they're a bunch of the guys from Queens, and they call themselves the smartest dumb guys in the room. And I'm like, that is such a good description of what the Beastie Boys were doing.
doing.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, I still to this day think of the Beastie Boys as like kind of party music.
Yeah,
you know, and maybe that's just the place I was in my life, but it was like music that, and it you know, sure, it doesn't have like straight up social commentary, but it's entertaining.
All right, so I think that's it for our album fight. I'm not sure how fighty that was.
No, Jason probably won't be very happy about that.
No, he won't. Technically, I'm as hard as steel. Gonna get it together. Watch it. Yeah, we'll talk at you next month, or next time, or whenever.
Bye.
Really? You're doing that again?
No, sorry. Okay, thanks everyone for listening. Don't hate the player, hate the game. Keep it on and on and on and on.
Wow, I'm absolutely overwhelmed. I don't even know what to say. I'm at a loss for words.
Oh my goodness. Hooray! It worked! That's the poetry of silence.
Yeah, for sure. I think I was going to go that you both win and that, you know, the other winners are our listeners, because that one was pretty amazing, especially with all the sound clips.
See, this is the beauty of fair dealing. I've got to use all that stuff.
But I wasn't happy about being cut off. I think I went, 20 minutes on my little Lana Del Rey rant. So, you know, I'm not psyched about being cut off. But there are a few standouts. Number one is, I don't know if you're willing to talk about it on air, but I would love to hear how you use the Beastie Boys to woo women in Winnipeg. I mean, I just can't get over that. I'm stuck on that. Also, I feel like Patrick went a little gangster this time, and I like it. I like seeing that from him. Him saying, bring it. I mean, wow.
Yeah, no.
You know, I think Kanye really is kind of, whether he wants to admit it or not, rubbing off on him. I do love both albums. Communication was the album of my early 20s.
Okay.
Cruising around in my 1986 Nissan Pulsar, thinking I was the coolest guy in Calgary. And recently, it's one of those... I probably kept the windows up when I was listening to Watch the Throne because I was a little embarrassed, but I couldn't help but kind of...
Well, didn't you...
prove into it.
Didn't you give, when we were talking about this, didn't you say that you can be like, oh, this is... I didn't realize Kanye was on this album. I thought this was a Jay-Z album.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Well, you know.
So I don't know. I don't know. As I said before, I had some celebrity judges lined up. I was even going to try and tweet Kanye, but I was just too busy listening to you guys. I had tweeted Ad Rock a couple of weeks ago to try and get him on the show. And it turned into me sort of stalking him a little bit. So that one didn't work out. Yeah, that was an amazing, I think, a win for Librarians on the Radio. I think you both did a really good job. I thought for sure you were going to do the thing where he hands it to you, but he didn't do that.
No.
Pretty impressive performance from Patrick this time.
I feel like it was one of those things that when we were doing it and we were talking, and it just became a really good conversation about rap culture and stuff. And it was awesome. And we were kind of self-consciously white dudes doing it, and it was, I think, felt...
So in closing, I just got to ask then, I'm picturing you reciting Beastie Boys' Ill Communication as poetry to these women that you're wooing in Winnipeg.
Okay.
You're reciting Root Down as if it's your own poem or something.
Let me deflect off of that, and let's talk about something else here. And one of the things that actually, when we were recording this album fight, we were doing it at the Harbourfront Library, and we've got a big window in the room that we were doing it. And outside the window, Emily Orr of our Tales thing earlier, she was standing outside the window with signs being held up with Lauryn Hill, Jean Grey, Missy, all of the amazing female hip-hop artists we were totally ignoring in our album fight. So, yeah. So, apologies all around, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk more about the wooing later back at the library.
Yay for Emily for doing that.
Yep. Nope. She opinions are strong when it comes to hip hop and poetry, and that's what we're looking for, right? Like, because when we talk about poetry, I think actually one of the things that Patrick was talking about, the poetry as instigator, and you know, it's a way of thinking about things differently. It's that focus on something, that focus on something that isn't, you know, prosaic, I guess, to go completely in definitions of the words, because, oh, okay, so I think we have a little bit of time, but because I'm talking about definitions of the words, this didn't make it into the album fight, but one of my researchy things was that the Beastie Boys are actually in the Oxford English Dictionary 8 times as parts of definitions for different words, and one of the most important ones there is the definition of, what do you think, Jason?
Ill?
Of course! So yeah, no, they are cited as a source for the definition of ill being.
And what about Kanye?
I did not delve into that side of the equation there.
All right.
Yeah. So I think though we're getting close to the end here for our show. I guess one of the other things, well, Suzanne already mentioned on the events about the Cascadia Poetry Festival, which is coming up, and the library is really excited about that and things. So, yeah, poetry, hooray. Mm-hmm.
And when are we on the air next, Justin? Do you remember?
I do not remember off the top of my head.
May, though.
May 26th pops into my mind. So,
yes, that sounds...
If it's a Tuesday, that's what it is.
That sounds good. And you know what I will have been doing just before May 26th? I will be traveling off to Toronto at the beginning of May for the Toronto Comic Arts Festival, which is an amazing comics festival that happens inside the main branch of the Toronto Public Library. And so I am totally bringing my recording gear, and I will hopefully have a whole bunch of cool chats with all these comic artists about what the libraries mean to them out in Toronto.
Very cool.
That is going to be the plan for our next episode.
So much for libraries just being full of dusty old books. And
we so totally aren't full of dusty old books. We are full of vibrant, the wonderful people.
With lots of ideas.
Lots.
That's right.
Okay, so.
That's great. Thank you so much, Jason Cuffler and Justin Unruh, and also Patrick Siebold for being part of the album fight today.
And don't forget Emily.
And Emily. Yes, Emily Orr, who's the children's librarian. Right?
Digital services.
Digital services. Sorry. Yes, digital services at the Harborfront Library. Maybe because we just have a quick minute here, you could mention what's happening with the Harborfront Library. We talked about it last week when Jason was in, but
right,
you're closed, but you're not really.
So what's happening is the main branch is we're clearing things out of it right now to get it ready for all of the contractors to come in and, you know, pull up the floors and paint everything and, move all the shelves and stuff. In the meantime, while the main branch is closed, we've got a space at, it's 84 Commercial, is that?
That's correct, the old CTV space.
Right. See, as a non-Nanaimo native, calling it the CTV space means nothing to me. But that is the place where people can come in to pick up their holds that they place online and things. You can pick stuff up there. You can drop off your books there. And so, that is still up and open. And we're still, totally right there.
And it's basically right next door to the branch itself. If you were looking at the library's front door, it's just off to the right. Yes?
Yes.
And I think probably what you, just to go back to something I know you don't want to talk about, I think probably what you meant is more like woo-tanging instead of wooing, right?
Wow, nice callback there. How much research did you do on your phone while we were talking about other things?
I didn't at all. I just had a special request from someone. Quick, make a woo-ing pun.
Ah,
so,
there we go.
There we go. Always satisfy our listeners. Thanks, Suzanne.
Excellent. And those branch hours, the temporary branch hours, Tuesday to Friday.
10 to 6.
10 to 6. Saturday.
10 to 5.
10 to 5. Right.
That's right.
Thank you so much. That's been a great show. Check us out on Facebook. And on behalf of our production team, thanks so much for joining us.